Welcome to my Love Life Podcast, episode number 229, Getting Kids to Eat Healthier. It's March 6th, 2024. I'm your host, Lisa A. Lundy, author, blogger, YouTuber, motivational speaker, and something. I don't know what. I am also a member of the Newsweek Expert Forum. What I do is I help people be happy, healthy, and well-loved, even when life is very difficult. As my disclaimer, this podcast does not constitute medical or therapy advice in any fashion. There is no longer any music to my podcast intros or outros. I invite you to join the movement and get other podcasters and social media content creators to ditch the music when combined with voice, which is very beneficial and helpful to people who have hearing loss. End of non-musical podcast intro. Getting kids to eat healthier. Oh my heavens, people. I have a few things to say about this. And I hopefully will give you some inspiration. I don't know. But before I dive in, if you listening to this podcast are feeling hopeless or suicidal or that life is simply too hard for you, I am asking you to call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255 or call or text 988. There is help available. It's very understandable. If that's how you feel, just take the help, make the call or text. And as I said in the podcast intro, nothing I say in any of my content is designed or intended to be medical or therapy advice. Okay, getting kids to eat healthier. Oh, I'm laughing because I, like everything else, people, I made every mistake in the book. So I think I was fairly successful with this, but not without a few missteps. And this is so important. Now, so right out of the gates, I understand the frustrations, the issues, the problems that are involved in getting kids of any age to eat healthier. I am not minimizing the frustrations or the problems or the issues. I'm not belittling them or demeaning them. I get it. I understand. Been there. I know it's a challenge, you know, but at the same time, moms and dads and grandparents and caregivers have been doing this forever, literally decades and since the beginning of time. And there's even like ancient cookbooks of like sneaky ways to get your kids to eat vegetables. So for this podcast, my first request is that you bring an open mind to this idea. There are some parents, because I've been a parent for a long time. There are some parents who tell me, oh yeah, my kids just won't eat vegetables. There's nothing I can do about it. That's resignation. And that's not a powerful place for you to be as a parent or caregiver. And I do understand that's how some people view it. And if that's how you view it, then guess what? Your kids won't be eating healthier or fruits or vegetables. But if you can bring an open mind to it, to this podcast, maybe you will hear some ideas that can help you move off of that and bring play and fun to it, because I did eventually bring play and fun to this, not right away though. And I'm a diehard fan of being playful and fun. It's just that the way this started was having someone who was diagnosed with malnutrition, and it just wasn't a good start. So I had to move my mindset and move my attitude, which I eventually did. So please bring an open mind. If you're in resignation, that's not going to be powerful for you. But if you're in resignation, like my kids will never do it, then they won't. Regardless of where you're at, I do have three very important podcasts that I would like you to listen to in addition to this. If you're dealing with children of any age. Number one, environmental toxins and your health. Number two, food and your health. And number three, gluten intolerance and celiac disease. Those three podcasts contain significant information if you are a parent, grandparent, caregiver, or deal with children with respect to children's health. Please. So I mean, I can't force you to, but I think you would be happy if you were more informed. Because quite frankly, if I had been more informed when my kids were young, I would have done things differently. And then when I found out certain things about toxins or food or food additives or this or that, I made changes because my children's health was important to me. So before I get into this, getting your kids to eat healthier, I do want to say there is a direct relationship between cancer and nutrition, or I should say a direct relationship between cancer and a lack of nutrition or other nutrients, as well as other health problems. So this is extremely important for the health and well-being of children. I have a few suggestions, but before I give you suggestions on the process and how you can get your kids to eat healthier, there are a couple issues I need to address up front. One is, I'm calling this food issues in kids. So one issue with children of any age can be undereating or overeating. Now, we have quite a few children who are overweight or in some cases obese, which can be because of the foods they're eating. It could be because of gluten intolerance or celiac disease. It could be because of a health issue. It could be related to stress, family chaos, or trauma. But undereating or overeating in children of any age should not be ignored. It could be a simple case of food being used to numb the child, teen, adult child's feelings. That's very common in America and in the world. But having overeating or undereating is a very significant problem. My suggestion is, in this case, if you have a physician for your child, then they're probably telling you your child is overweight or your child is underweight or whatnot. But I have a free emotional workbook on my website, and my recommendation would be you dive in, you get to work on learning how to manage and process your emotions and teach your children that. If your children are 10 or 12 or, older, they can read the emotional processing workbook themselves, but get underneath overeating or undereating, which might not be what you think it is. Number two, picky eaters. I do not like the word picky eaters, probably because I was called a picky eater when I was a child. I don't remember being called a picky eater, but I probably absolutely qualified. So that's why I'm not a fan of that person, because here's the real deal. Some children are refusing to eat certain foods because they're actually allergic to them. And they don't find that out until adulthood or later in life. And so some people, I'm not saying everybody, by the way, but some people are actually allergic to the foods that they will not eat. Now, I found out by accident late in life that I am allergic to mushrooms, like really allergic to mushrooms, highly anaphylactically allergic to mushrooms, which I never ate mushrooms. So I didn't know that. And then I accidentally was given or ate a veggie burger that was like 95% mushrooms based. And I had a reaction right away, which I didn't know the veggie burger was made out of mushrooms or I wouldn't have eaten it. But at any rate, it took a large amount. And then I was like, oh, it was instant. So some children or teens or whatever are intuitively, it's almost like an intuitive thing, that they will not eat a certain food. So that's one piece. Now, some children could have undiagnosed celiac disease, or they could be gluten intolerant, which could result in them showing up as a picky eater. Well, later in life, we did find out that I have a problem with gluten, which might be why I would never eat pancakes, gluten pancakes, unless I had like blueberry syrup to like cover up the taste. Yeah, I know. My beloved mother, God rest her soul, would buy me blueberry syrup for pancakes, or if they didn't have it, she would get raspberry syrup. But, and so there could be a food sensitivity. There could be a food allergy. There could be a gluten sensitivity or celiac disease. And it could be that your child is actually sensitive to food dyes, food preservatives, additives, chemical sugars, or other things that are in the food. Or they might simply not like it. So we label children who won't just go with the flow as picky eaters. And that's okay. You can do that. I'm just suggesting that if you have a child or adolescent or teenager or adult child who you've labeled a picky eater, maybe it's time to look at, is it that they're a picky eater or is it that they're sensitive to things that are you're putting in the food or that are in the food that don't agree with them? Or they could be intuitive and know that they're actually allergic to it. Number three under this food issues piece before I give you suggestions is sensory or sensory processing issues. I'm not sure how common that is. I think it's way more common than it used to be. But your child might require some testing or they might require some OT intervention. If they have sensory or sensory processing issues when it comes to food. Now, that aside, I will say that several of the suggestions I'm about to give you about how to get your kids to eat healthier would fall in line with what they might recommend if you had a child with sensory processing issues when it comes to food or sensory issues when it comes to food. All right, so all that being said, number one, here's my suggestions for you if you'd like to get your kids to eat healthier. Number one, and you do not have to agree with this, but number one, my recommendation is that you teach your kids that to be healthy, they have to have the right fuel for their body. Like you put gas in the car, the foods they eat and the beverages they drink are gas for their body, fuel for their body. My recommendation for this is because when they grow up and they leave your house, if you've laid the foundation, you've at least laid the foundation. Whether they eat healthy after they grow up is not your problem. I mean, you might not be happy about it, but you've at least given them training. This is called like training and development. And I'm a fan of teaching kids, if you don't want to get cancer and you want to be healthy, you have to eat, you have to put good things in your body. Number two. Okay, number two. So, make a fun outing to the grocery store and have your child. Now, this works for young, middle, adolescent, and even teens. Pick a fruit or vegetable that they would like to eat or try. Now, ideally, if you're going to do this the way I did it, you're going to do looking for new fruits and vegetables because hopefully, when you embark on this, they're at least eating some fruits and vegetables. Like they're at least eating a couple or something. And even if they're not, that's okay. But have them pick out. Like it's like, I had three kids, so my three kids would each pick a different fruit or vegetable. And you could actually have a ball doing this. We actually had a very good time doing this. And what was interesting was as the kids would pick up some very interesting exotic fruits, and then eventually we got to the exotic vegetables. But some of them, I had no idea what they were. I'd never seen them before. So I had to ask for help from the produce worker. And the first time it happened, the particular person that I asked for help, like just kind of gave me the deer in the headlights look. Like they had no idea what that was in my hand either. I mean, there was a label on the bin. And I said, well, I'm looking to just try to find out anything more, do you know. And they went and they actually found an employee that was familiar with that particular exotic fruit who could say, well, it's kind of sweet. This is how you eat it or, you know, whatever the recommendations were. And that was like amazing. Well, let me tell you, the second time we went back, that produce employee, I mean, this was the second time we went back to have each kid pick out a new fruit or vegetable. That produce employee was so on board. They had talked to other employees and they were like happily waiting, like greeting us, the three kids and I, to say, oh, I have some ideas for you. And they had gotten the lay of the land. It was so amazing. It was very cute and very sweet and very helpful. And of course, now we had somebody else on board. Like, it snowballed. So definitely make an outing, have your kids pick a fruit or a vegetable. I was looking this up before this podcast, and I'm like, oh yeah. Those are some of the things that we looked at and that we bought that I had never eaten before, and I probably will never eat again. But make it a fun adventure. And then number three, you are going to prepare and eat the fruit or vegetable that you picked up, the new one. And in most of the cases, on the way home, my kids would say, well, how are we going to eat this? How are we going to eat what we got? And I would laugh and say, I have no idea, but we'll figure it out, because that's kind of my approach to life. I don't know, but we'll figure it out. So some of them, you know, I just like looked up and, you know, like we had figured it out for each different food. Now, I will give you a little I'll call this the cheater's hint. When it comes to a green vegetable, that could be Swiss chard, bok choy, kale. I mean, I don't think I'd ever eaten Swiss chard or bok choy in my life prior to this adventure. But bacon makes any green taste better. That is my hot tip. I know. So that's number three. Number four, teach your children to cook. I'm going to tell you straight up that when my kids were literally 18 months old, they would sit in the barstool chair at the kitchen counter and want to be involved when I was cooking and baking. Now, at 18 months old, this is what I did. I gave them a bowl. I gave them some measuring spoons. I gave them some flour and said, tell me what else you want. And I let them play with the flour, with the ingredients. I remember one of the kids did flour, then asked for different spices and herbs, kind of things I had out already that I was using. And then, they were just like having a ball. And then they said, oh, and dish soap, give me some dish soap. So I gave them the dish soap. They put dish soap in with the flour. It was just like, there was no judgment on my part. There was no criticism. There was like, oh no, that's not how you do it. I know people would do it like that. I didn't do it like that. I'm like, whatever you want, here you go. And they were in their glory, like they were making up a recipe. Of course, at 18 months, not thinking, you don't eat something that has dish soap in it. But they were just play. It was just play. So that went on. And of course, we didn't eat it. We just like threw it out. But then by the time they were about two-ish, then they were really ready to measure and help, really be kitchen helpers. And I let them. Yes, they would get flour on the counter. Yes, sometimes flour on themselves. So what? They actually could be very helpful. Now, I mean, when they're measuring something, I'd have them measure it over a separate bowl. But it was that's good for fine motor skills. It's good for their executive functioning of their brain. It was good for so many reasons, which I didn't even know, because I'm not a child development expert, etc. But teach your children to cook. Expose them early. We have an adorable picture of the kids at the stove when one of them was making Sloppy Joe at a young age. I mean, I'm thinking he was 6, 7, you know, like not that old. And they are all, before they left the house and went to college, they were all very, what I would call, accomplished cooks. They could make anything from scratch, gluten-free, dairy-free, egg-free, peanut-free, baked goods, you name it, they could make it. And here's the final icing on the cake, that after they were out at college and since college, this really pretty much came up while they were in college, is they all said, ugh, I am so glad I know how to cook, and I know how to cook well. So they were all extremely happy that they knew how to cook. They know how to cook and bake. And this is a very good thing. And if you're trying to get your kids to eat healthier, well, get them in the kitchen. Number five. Okay, this one. Have them invent their own dishes using vegetables and fruits. So, yes, I did. By the way, I did all these things, people. I did all these things. What do they say? Necessity is the mother of invention. So I would say to them, okay, well, you need to invent a dish. We need to come up with, you know, invent a dish around a vegetable or find a way to do something. So one of the kids who had never had beef stroganoff, never had it before, because we were gluten-free and dairy-free, and beef stroganoff has gluten and dairy, made a gluten-free, dairy-free, egg-free, etc. free beef stroganoff dish with green beans that was out of this world. Now, it was after I had invented a gluten-free roux sauce, which I'd never heard of, but I figured, oh, well, I know how to make a roux sauce. I should be able to do it gluten-free to kind of get a creamy, non-dairy, non-egg, non-gluten sauce. And it was like to die for, but added the green beans for nutrition, which was just perfect. And another one of the kids invented a non-dairy cheese dip. I mean, look, we really had some fun, which comes into the next one, number seven. While you're having your kids invent new dishes or drinks or smoothies or what have you, have them make up cool names for the new dish. Or it could be a modified dish. So one of the recipes my mom had was for this delicious butternut squash soup. Of course, it had wheat, it had dairy, and I converted it to taste like her recipe without the dairy and wheat. And so then we had a new dish, and I said to the kids, all right, now we're going to brainstorm. So the four of us sat around, and there were all these different versions, all these different words they wanted. And there, you know, there's three of them. And this is such a good activity for kids, by the way. And so here's the name we ended up with by agreement. I didn't really care what they named it, but by the three kids' agreement, it was called Grandma Jean's Superstar Soup. So Grandma Jean's Superstar Soup is the name that the butternut squash soup ended up with. And we had some other names. One was the Baltimore casserole. And I have to dig up that recipe because I don't even remember what was in that. And it did not make it into my new current gluten-free and allergy-free cookbook. But you can really have some fun inventing new names. I'll mention one later. So the other thing, number seven, is list ideas for recipes when you're dining out. But when you come home, you can make the dish without wheat or gluten or additives or preservatives or things that are toxic. We ended up doing this out of necessity because of the gluten-free diet and the food allergies that we had. But it's a wonderful way to involve your children of any age into having better quality foods that are just like the restaurant. So there are four things right off the top of my head that we did. One was this, well, we ended up naming this the Country Cottage Potato Soup, which was this delicious, creamy soup that I had, oh, it's just like to die for, that the boys and I had at a restaurant, and they were like, oh, we need to go home. We need to make this without dairy and gluten and yada yada, so, you know, Ann can have it. And I was like, oh, what a great idea. It was a great idea. We also took a hot and sour soup from a Chinese restaurant and made our own of that. Another dish we lifted from a restaurant was their warm, hot spinach and artichoke dip, made non-dairy, of course. And also, you can do this with store-bought food. So there was this store-bought sweet and sour sauce that was red, which not only contained red food dye, blah, which was a no-go, it contained some not very good additives and preservatives. Now, that sauce I did end up making from scratch, not having the kids do it, but I made it from scratch. It took me 10 tries to get the taste right. And it's delicious. It's in my cookbook, but you can lift ideas from store products or restaurants and then involve your kids, because those dishes like the spinach and artichoke dip, you know, that's usually, if you buy it commercially, very high in sodium, usually has other, you know, preservatives or ingredients that aren't good, and you're just going to get a much better quality food and healthier food. Number 8, soups are a fantastic way to boost nutrition and to get your kids to eat healthier. Now, I will say, for this podcast, I did page through my old gluten-free allergy free cookbook, that's the one that's currently for sale, and I was kind of surprised that I had forgotten about this whole soup thing. So we joined an organic co-op, and one of the foods we got in abundance was Swiss chard, and I thought, oh, how are we going to eat all this Swiss chard? I can't even imagine how we will eat all this Swiss chard. But I wasn't going to let it go to waste, so I made this Swiss chard soup. And I had low expectations, very low expectations. However, the soup was tasty enough that my two boys came back and asked for seconds on the soup. I know, like I had that written in the cookbook, and I thought, well, it's a good thing I made a note of that all back in the day. I would never remember that now. And I also made the soup, not my favorite. Okay, not my favorite, but it was a hit, which was, we ended up calling it the Winter Warm-Up Soup, and it was from the organic produce from the winter share, so it contains turnips, parsnips, and celerac. None of those foods do I really like, by the way. None of those foods would I eat on their own, ever. No. But in a soup, it was popular enough that we kept it as a recipe. Anything that wasn't, if it wasn't like delicious, we just would toss the recipe and say nope. So vegetable soups, by the way, are a great way to boost, get your kids to eat healthier and get some more fruits and vegetables. One of the soups we made, we called Simple Simon's Vegetable Soup. Cream of cauliflower, cream of broccoli. Like, soups are a great way to increase their fruits and their vegetables. So number 9, my one suggestion I have is that you bring this mentality that when there's a will, there's a way. That you bring the mentality that you'll figure it out. Hopefully you're going to bring play and fun, and hopefully you can see, of course, we had a ball. I mean, I really have to find my first cookbook, which is out of print, and see if the Baltimore casserole's in that, or maybe just look for my Word document on my computer. Like, I don't even remember what was in the Baltimore casserole, but I remember we named it, and I remember how we came up with that name. So find a way. Like, when I cooked beets for the first time for my kids, this was a little before I had the right attitude. Okay, I didn't have the right attitude. So got beets from the co-op, cooked them, put them in bowls for them, and said, okay, you got to eat beets. Like, that's not how to do it, people. That is not how you do it. So they're like, oh yeah, no, we're not doing that. So they put a little salt on, and then finally they got out of the fridge this what was called Cowboy's Dip, which is a non-dairy kind of a ranch, imitation ranch, and then they could eat the beets. They ate the beets with the Cowboy's Dip, no problem. But I'm just saying, before I found my mojo, before I found my swing to bring play and fun, I put the beets down in front of them and said, I don't care how you eat them, just eat them. that is not how you do it. I'm telling on myself. Smoothies are another great way. Number 10, add vegetables to every dish possible. We added them to chili. We would add lots of vegetables to chili. We added vegetables to other meat dishes. We added vegetables to potato dishes. Basically, it's a great way not only to increase the vegetables, but It will help stretch your food bill if you're adding it to your meat or poultry dishes. So there's a side benefit. Number 11, nutrition density. This was something I had to learn in dealing with malnutrition and malabsorption as I gained many years of education on nutrition, the hard way, hard school nutritional education. So once I became intimately aware of malnutrition, malabsorption, the importance of nutrition, then I obviously was way more motivated to boost nutritional density in the foods my kids were eating. So one great way to boost nutritional density is to use pumpkin or sweet potato or some other vegetable like that. Usually it's pumpkin or sweet potato. In things like waffles, muffins, baked goods, which helps boost the nutrition. Now, to make it even more nutrient dense, then you could use either a half grain or a whole grain flour, and you could use a natural sweetener like maple syrup or something else that's natural. So, because I was dealing with the gluten-free, dairy-free, egg-free, peanut-free diet, some of the nutrient-dense foods I made were whole grain nutrient-dense, and some of them were half grain. It depended because at that time we were on a rotation diet. And so we do have whole grain gluten-free flours, but we also have gluten-free flours that would not constitute whole grain. So that's one way. And by the way, our sweet potato waffles or our pumpkin chocolate chip muffins, like they're to die for. And you can even add, I did add ground flax seed to some of the recipes to increase the nutrition density. But this is all, it's a different thought process to say, we eat these pancakes, could we make them more nutritious? We make these bagels. Is there a way to make them more nutritious? Well, if you move from a half grain or to a whole grain, that's a little boost. So there you go. So getting hip to the value of nutrition and the importance of nutrition, then you can start to go, how could I make the foods we're eating more nutritious, more dense in terms of nutrition? Now, I will mention at this point, number 12, that there are some people who advocate that you hide your fruits and vegetables from your kids in the foods. That is what some people recommend. And if that's what you want to do, I support you. As long as you're getting your kids to eat fruits and vegetables, I'm not going to argue with you. My point, though, is when children become aware of the significance of nutrition and they get involved and they're having fun, it's a very different approach. So there are people who are going to recommend and stick to it that you just hide the fruits and vegetables and they won't even know it. Yes, you can do that. And if that's how you do it, that's how you do it. My first recommendation earlier on was teach your kids the value of nutrition. Don't you want your kids to know how they can be healthy? All right, next up, number 13. Okay, we did this, which is to play a game or count up the number of fruits or vegetables that you have eaten before dinner. And we would do this before dinner because we would use whatever number we were at to decide, do we need to have an extra vegetable for dinner, or what do we need to change for dinner to meet our number? Now, had my kids striving for 9 back in the day, even though 9 was not the government recommended number. I felt that 9 was the right number because we probably wouldn't make it to 9, but if 9 was the goal, we might make it to 7. And what we did have, and I highly recommend this if you're open to it and if the ingredients work for you, is they make delicious beverages that contain either a full fruit and a full vegetable or a half a fruit and a half a vegetable that are delicious. So sometimes in the middle of the afternoon when we're planning dinner or talking about, okay, what's on tap for dinner, we would do the hand count. Well, I had da 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 da, and they'd end up with, well, I'm at 4, or I'm at 3, or I'm at 5, or whatever. And sometimes it would be like, well, I guess we'll have a little cheat drink to boost the fruits and vegetables. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, people. If you find a fruit drink or a nice tasting beverage that's in your budget that has the right ingredients and good healthy ingredients that will increase your fruits and vegetables, I see nothing wrong with that. And I'm sure there are like dyed-in-the-wool people who go to the extreme who would be like, oh, that's terrible. Well, you know, you can do your own thing. Number 14. Oh, make homemade salad dressings, sauces, and dips. So the one reason about this is because, well, hopefully you might want your kids to eat salads. Now, I don't have kids that would always eat salads. However, teaching your kids that they can make their own salad dressings, it's just not something that everybody knows. I mean, I've met adults who are like, I wouldn't begin to know how to make a salad dressing if it wasn't in a little package I tore open, pour in a bottle, and added oil and vinegar, which is fine. But I have a lot of salad dressing, sauces, and dips in my current cookbook because they're wildly fun to make. They don't have some of the nasty ingredients. And this is this can be very fun for children. The more you involve them, and it usually tastes better. And have them experiment. And it's like, I'm telling you that, you know, like the Cowboy's Dip, you can tell that that's the name of the recipe, Cowboy's Dip. And there's another one that I was paging through my current cookbook that I'd left in the current cookbook, which is sweet and spiced toast. That's a recipe invented by one of my kids. I forget whether they were 10 or whatever age. But by the way, it's delicious. Have your kids learn how to make dressings or sauces or dips. This is exceptionally valuable, and you really can bring a lot of play to it and fun. All right, number 15, I'm calling this meal planning, prep, and cleanup. Well, I involved my kids when they were a little bit older, with meal planning and prep and cleanup. Why? Because I'm not interested in making food that my kids go, oh yeah, we don't feel like that tonight. No, my kids and I would sit down, I'd say, we're gonna plan the meals for the week, what are you in the mood for? And sometimes we would get out the cookbook and we'd go, oh, we haven't had jambalaya in a while, or we haven't had, you know, Jamaican jerk chicken, or we haven't had that, you know. And so involving them in the planning of the meals not only teaches them meal planning, but we would do meal planning before we went to the store. And then prep. Like, there would be four of us doing the vegetable prep and the dinner and the meal prep. Like, I didn't have that much kitchen space back in the day. So we would have, you know, one or two of the kids chopping up vegetables at the dining room table. But they were involved in choosing what am I willing to eat this week, what do I want to eat, and coming together and say, yep, okay, we'll go with chili or we'll go with this, and okay. And then also involved in cleaning the vegetables and prepping them, and also when they were older, cooking and cleanup. I mean, I'm not the maid. I see no reason for me to do all that by myself. And when my kids got older and they were more like in the teen category, they would occasionally be asked to make a meal on their own, which was very engaging for them. So you can really have a good time, but I'm just a fan of teamwork. And that was actually part of the whole underpinnings of having them help me prep and cook and clean up, is because we're a team. So that we often talked about team and teamwork. All right, number 16, which is, I think this is the last one before I give you some final thoughts, is I'm calling this divide and conquer. And I'm laughing because I love this. All right, so divide and conquer. So I would always take the kids to the grocery store, and on a good day, we'd be in little matching outfits. That means like the boys would have tan shorts and red shirts, and Anne would have either tan shorts or tan skirt or tan jumper or tan something with a red top, and I would be in tan and red. And so we'd have these little matching outfits, which I loved, by the way. But we'd go to the grocery store. When they got older, you know, old enough, then the kids, I would separate the grocery list. And when they were old enough, they would go in pairs. So there'd be, you know, like the oldest one could go by himself, and the next, the middle, and the youngest would go together. And then eventually they were old enough they could all go by themselves. And they would take a portion of the grocery list and go shop, which at a certain age, kids love that. They feel like they're an adult. They have a shopping cart. They actually have a list. They're really picking real stuff. Now, you have to do this age appropriately because you have to have your kids be safe. I am not one to say that I would just let my whatever year old go off in a grocery store by themselves. No way. No way. I mean, like, I remember what happened to John Walsh's son in a mall. So it has to be age appropriate where we're sure that they're safe. Sure. But at a certain age, kids really get a charge out of having a cart or basket. Sometimes they would have a basket, their own little list, and going and getting the ingredients. So I'm calling this divide and conquer because, you know, we would divide the list and conquer. And sometimes we would make the game, all right, we'd look at the list. Okay. All right. Who's taking what? Who's doing what? All right. How many minutes do we think we could do the shopping in? Oh, 15, oh, 20, oh, 30 or whatever. And then we'd go in and it was like a little game. And I have to say one time we were at a store. It was since we were in Pennsylvania. So the kids were like 12, 14 and 16 at that point. So they're older. They're older kids. And the person who I knew that I ran into the store saw us as we were like fanning out to go. And they were, their jaw just dropped. Like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, divide and conquer. We're going to see if we can get this done in like 15 minutes or whatever, you know. And it was very enjoyable. It was not a chore. Okay, it wasn't a chore. And when they were older, then we added to the whole process by saying, all right, now let's estimate how much the grocery bill is going to be today. You take your list, and they would round to the nearest dollar or round to $5 or what have you to guesstimate, just a guesstimate of what their portion of what they picked up would be, and then we total it together and we'd see how close we were, which gives them a good experience that it costs money. Now, I didn't do that when they were younger, but it gives them a good idea, like, you know, food costs money. All right, let's figure this out. So I am a fan of divide and conquer. Now, I didn't mind when they were younger, all of us together, but it was actually enjoyable for them. Once they got to a certain age, once I knew they could either be on their own or be in pairs. And sometimes it was just the two boys would go off and Anne and I would stay together. But, you know, like that's when you're 10 or you're 8 or you're whatever, you know, shopping in a store, that's like not a bad experience for a young child or a young person, as long as you're safe. I am not saying go send your kid off by themselves. Like if they're old enough, okay, but you always have to be safe. So that's the divide and conquer. I know. I enjoyed it. Hey, I try to make a game out of everything I can. If it's a chore or it's kind of boring or it's kind of ho-hum, I'm going to try to think about, how can we have fun with this? Now, if you're going to stick to, there's no way my kids can eat fruits or vegetables, there's nothing I can do for you. That's a mindset or resignation that you've adopted. I'm a fan of if there's a will, there's a way, or when there's a will, there's a way. And I believe in that, and that's what I do. Now, I didn't know in the beginning how to work it out to get my kids to eat healthier, but I've just given you as many ideas as I could think of. And I hope that you will employ some of them because you do not have to suffer over this. There are many parents who when it comes to the idea of getting their kids to eat more fruits and vegetables, it involves sadness or like the negative emotions, which is fine. I understand that. I've already confessed, already had true confessions in this podcast that I didn't have the right attitude at the beginning. Listen, I will never be the perfect parent. I will be apologizing to my kids for the rest of their lives for mistakes I made or things I got wrong or whatever, what have you. And I'm not like happy about that. I'm happy if they will tell me, oh yeah, you did this and I really didn't like that. I'm happy if they will tell me that. But, you know, with respect to this, I did not bring the right attitude or mentality at the beginning, but we found our stride. So my point is, you don't have to suffer over this. You could bring some play, you could bring some fun. And this is very, very important if you want your kids to be healthier and to have the background of this. I understand that. Go off to college and everybody's eating pizza and Doritos. Nothing you can do about that. But if you've exposed them to this, that's, in my opinion, you've done your job. You're not going to control them after they leave. I hope that's been helpful. I hope you're going to bring some fun and play. Go do your shopping trips and find all these exotic fruits and vegetables. But that's it for now. Love you. I'm Lisa Lundy saying thank you for listening to my Love Life podcast, episode number 229, Getting Your Kids to Eat Healthier. I certainly hope you're going to get on the bandwagon and try some of my suggestions and have some fun in this area. That's it. Love you.